We're going to start, we'll hear shortly, of course, from Michael O'Regan and calls from the Dáil. We're going to start this morning by hearing from the Green Party leader and Minister for the Environment, Climate and Communications and Minister for Transport, Eamon Ryan. He's been in Kerry since yesterday at last night's meeting of the group of people, the Green Party and lots of locals as well, a full house in the Great Southern Hotel in Killarney. The subject was decarbonising Kerry. Is also on his way right now to meet with the elected officials and elected members of Kerry County Council and the executive of the council. So I spoke to him before coming on air here in Killarney. And I, first of all, wide-ranging interview on a number of different topics. But first of all, asked him about last night's meeting and about the fact that he actually was presented with some turf.
I did. I saw the turf. It was really good. I mean, it's... I said it was a lovely room and... It wasn't just agriculture. We were looking at energy and transport and all. You know, how does Kerry switch to this future? And there was a lot of heated discussion, which is good. And I thought it was really good. There was a farmer up from Lisbole, Denny Galvin. People, I'm sure he's been on your show at whatever stage. And he made a really good contribution because he's actually doing it in terms of really clever kind of use of energy on the farm. To help make money. And I think that's the first message I was giving last night, is we won't make this change if we're just pointing the fingers at people or shaming people or you're the problem. Or, and I think particularly a lot of those maybe smaller farmers, you know, those kind of suckler, cheap farmers, how can we create a situation where their sons and daughters take over the farm and make a good living out of it? And I think that's one of the big changes we need to get right. And we'll do it in a variety of ways. Firstly, we're trading on an Origin Green brand, and we are rightly. But we really need to make sure that it's completely Origin Green to be able to get a premium for it. The way we have over the years, like Kerrygold gets a premium. Well, we need to do that for all our produce. Secondly, though, I think we can make a lot of money for farmers by switching to their own renewable energy. We need to stop importing fossil fuels from Russia and elsewhere. We have significant resources in wind power, obviously, but also in solar power and also in anaerobic digestion. We were talking about that a lot last night in terms of how you maybe combine farm businesses. You can have a farm running, but then you can also feed grass and other slurry material into an anaerobic digester that makes our own gas and gets an income to the farm. Same with solar panels. We're going to introduce a lot of measures this summer where it'll help farmers and small businesses and householders put solar panels on the roof. That allows us to switch away from burning fossil fuels, as I said, which we have to do across the board. And thirdly, just in terms of income, a lot of talk last night about forestry, how we can do forestry in a way where you're not kind of shutting down the farm just to convert it into a forest.
Yeah.
But where you can do stitch farming within a forestry within the farming system, get the farmer to do it, provide an income to the farm, a fuel to the farm into the future, and also improve nature locally in doing that. So that was, I suppose, was very much centre stage in what we were talking about.
Okay, now that sounds great and those ideas are good and they've been talked about for a couple of years I know the technology is developing, but what would you say to someone that says, look, that's all fine, even if you look at the current crisis, the cost of living crisis, you could look at it from the point of view, you mentioned solar there and the idea of a farmer putting solar panels on his shed space, lots of shed space, lots of room, help him tackle that cost of living, especially cost of energy increase. You could say, is this going to speed it up or is this going to put it in the back burner? Those ideas, that work, that investment that's needed, sometimes the bureaucracy of government trying to get it through the system, will it be done in time or are people just there at the moment, I'm just trying to survive. I need to switch back to, a cap and excise on fuels. I need faster, quicker things because I'm struggling at the moment. I don't have the time or the money right now to make this transition given the crisis that we're in. What's your response to that argument?
It's true that it'll take time, but now is the time to start for sure when the prices are so high. But we do need measures in the interim, and government has, like in the last year or since last October, we have done about €2.5 billion worth of supports because it is a really difficult time for householders right across the country, and supports in cutting the excise on fuel tax and cutting and also providing direct cash payments and increased social welfare payments. We will go further in October, this debate.
Not until October.
No, because it was interesting. Early this week, there was a national economic dialogue. And rightly, I think, in this country, if we're planning for this, we listen to the various stakeholders. So listen to the business community, to the trade unions, to the social groups, the environmental pillar. And I think if we were listening, but not are kind of pretending to be listening, but say, oh, yeah, thank you very much indeed. Oh, we're announcing the measures next week. Well, that wouldn't be honest or fair. And I think it's better to get it right. It's better to do it within the budget process, because if we take money from any one sector, you know, there's another just as important need. Like, you know, there'll be people in saying in the health system or in our schools would say, well, listen, we need money too. So budget time is the right time to get that balance right. What are, and we will provide additional measures, but I think it's appropriate to do it in the budget at the same time as you work out how do we support childcare. I mean, I suppose what a lot of what government's thinking about, and I heard, I don't know if you heard Kevin O'Callaghan from the ICTU, the Congress of Trade Unions, saying during the week when we're talking about pay agreements now, he mentioned a thing called a social wage as well, where it isn't just about how much people are paid, it's also what's the cost of living. Like, can we, for example, reduce the cost of childcare, or can we continue, which we started this year, to reduce, for example, the cost of public transport? So in those sort of measures in government to try and reduce the costs people face, not just question you're going to
give them money
here, there, and everywhere. Try and get that blend right between how we reduce the real costs as well as looking at pay and looking at what other supports we make. And that takes a bit of time, and I think we're right to kind of put it together.
Are you worried, though, in the maelstrom of that debate, and perhaps maybe the winter of maybe industrial relations this country we may be heading into, we see what's happening in the United Kingdom at the moment, the pressure is that rise, that the green message will be lost? It'll be put aside and we can't do it now, it's too expensive and it won't be done in time.
Firstly, just when you see those strikes at the moment in the UK, that's what happens when you don't listen and you don't, you know, we're a smaller country. We have a different tradition, I think, and a different culture where we do work in partnership. And one of the benefits from that is, you know, hopefully, you know, it's not in anyone's interest if we end up in having strikes. So I think that is the right approach. And it's not easy. It takes, and it's difficult circumstances. I mean, it's unprecedented. What's happened internationally, we don't have control over the war in Ukraine. It's continuing to, it's not just in the cost of living, like the pressure everyone's under in terms of how we manage with looking after displaced people coming from that war, particularly in the likes of Kerry, North Kerry, large numbers of people coming in. It's really important that we get that element right. And we can't stop the war directly, but we do need to manage it in a whole variety of different ways.
The war is presenting all sorts of challenges as well. What do you say, and you talk about what needs to be done to stabilise our own electricity grid and to make sure, I know you've brought measures to Cabinet for emergency generators, 450 million, to make sure that we aren't in trouble. Germany has declared effectively an energy crisis.
Yeah.
And they've moved back to coal burning. That's Germany. They aren't able to make the switch. They aren't switching over to renewables to try and plug the gap. They have to go back to coal.
Well, go back to what you said there. The question you asked previously was about, you know, will we put aside the green agenda? I think the actual opposite is happening. I'm going actually to Luxembourg on Monday. We have a European Energy Council. And so that's all the energy ministers from across the European Union meeting. And actually what we're planning to do is beyond compare radical in the green direction. It's actually what we're going to agree as laws in Europe, and this will come from the top down, not just from Ireland, where we actually reduce the amount of energy we use. And yes, you can look at examples like that where Germany is kind of keeping...
They've just gone to the second stage in their three-stage emergency plan for gas.
Because there is a real risk. Now, their risk is slightly different to ours. They're particularly dependent on imported Russian gas and coal and oil. We're less so. We're that much further west. Most of our gas comes from, well, our own gas field, Cara, but also from the UK and Norway. We only get about 2% Russian gas. So we won't have the same energy security risks they have. But we are affected by the price. It's the one market. And that, again, I just keep coming back to this. I think this moment of transition, it's a moment of change. Reducing our use of those fuels is the best protection of our income, of our environment. But also there's a strategic rationale here. We can switch to our own power. we can switch to our own natural
resources.
Can
we do it in time? This does feed in as well to the argument for Shannon LNG. It won't solve the immediate crisis, but people are saying if we had an LNG terminal now, we would be under even less pressure, shall we say.
First, I kind of say, can we do it? I remember I was energy minister back in 2007, and we set a target that we would have 40% of our electricity coming from renewables. And everyone at the time said, you'll never do that. That's impossible. Couldn't be done. Physically couldn't be done. We did it by 2020. And now we're saying, okay, we're going to go to 80% by 2030. And I'm convinced we can do it. One of the main ways we'll do it is starting switching offshore, because that's our sea area is 7 times our land area. There's a limit, as we know, in Kerry, how much turbines you can put up in any one area. But at sea, the resource is huge. The wind power is really strong, as people know, and
still,
the technology is
advancing.
Still
4 or 5 years away yet?
No, it's
you think it's going to happen quicker?
Oh, God, yeah.
Off the West Coast?
It'll start on the East Coast.
Yeah.
We're starting this year. We'll have the auction for the first of the major offshore projects, and most of them are on the East Coast in the Irish Sea. And most of them are, you drive the turbines into the sandbanks along that coast.
Yeah.
But we're now also planning phase two, which starts to go to the west and southwest. And yes, it can be done. And to answer your question about LNG and about Shannon, I had a meeting with Barry O'Sullivan, who's heading the Shannon Area Task Force. And that's really important for Kerry. Like, it's really important. That's just not a Limerick or a Tipperary.
That's about more than Shannon LNG. It's about untapped potential the last 20 years, this whole region.
It's about the whole region. It's about the whole estuary and the counties bordering it. And I'm clear. Firstly, we will have a lot of offshore wind which will come ashore into the Shannon estuary. That's where we have the deep water port. Mm. And if you look at what the likes of the ESB are proposing, if you look at Money Point on the other side of the estuary, it's similar with Tarbert actually on this side, but you've got all you need there. You've got a really good deep water jetty so any ships can get in. You've a platform there that you could deploy turbines out. But what the ESB want to do, so you bring the offshore wind in there, you use the grid which we have. You know, people will note there's major wires, electricity wires, connecting to both Tarbert and Money Point. You can then put that electricity onto that grid. It powers the country. When the wind isn't blowing, what the ESB are saying we should do, and what everyone in Europe is now talking about and starting to do, is you convert the electricity into hydrogen. You use that with a thing called electrolysis. And it's a new but advancing technology. And then when the wind isn't blowing, you burn the hydrogen to generate power, and so you run the power out on the same grid. So you have a continuous, stable electricity source.
You're saying that will be delivered in time to keep things stable. This is the time when you're buying emergency generators, backup generators for next winter.
Yeah, now we will have emergency generators to provide backup as well. We do need that. But the really big strategic option by 2030, what we're planning to have is about 5 gigawatts of offshore wind. And just to put that in scale, that's equivalent to the light, because the light's up at us now, that's equivalent to the amount of energy we'd be using at the current time. So we by 2030 can deliver that level. Then the following decade, and this is the really big industrial plan for the country, is we can use that to actually to go further, to really tap into the scale of power that's available. And for the likes of the Shannon region, if you look at what we have there in Agonish Alumina, big aluminium smelting plant, Irish Cement, you look at Shannon Airport. What I'm saying to Shannon Airport, and I've been in the States recently saying to the US authorities, let's go back to what Shannon was always historically been, this connection point, the nearest connection point between North America and Europe. And whichever of the new sustainable transport fuels are evolving, which they are, because every sector has to move towards this cleaner future, that we would provide those in Shannon. Mm. And that starts to bring Shannon back relevant again as the kind of low carbon alternative.
Okay.
And for the region, that's where the world is going.
And that's where you feel we need to go. Yeah. The transition will involve pain. It'll involve change for people. It'll involve some costs. Are you concerned that the Green Party, once again, is getting the blame when in government for all these sort of changes, despite the fact that all parties have signed up for it, even opposition parties, many of them have signed up for it. Maybe not in the way, like with carbon tax, that you're going. But are you concerned that, and there's plenty of opposition politicians, some of them in this county, who spend every week giving out about crazy, daft green notions, are you worried that you're getting tagged with all the difficult choices in this area?
No, I mean, it's tough in government. Like, you know, politics, you don't go in and expect, oh, this is going to be an easy ride.
But it's personally targeted at you. A lot of it. Talk of wolves in the national park and lynxes and what do we do with it? Here's another crazy green notion.
There's a major study out this week saying that actually makes...
And we covered it on the show.
That makes a lot of sense.
People throw their eyes to heaven and they think it's all the Greens and I can't wait till they're out of government. I'm paraphrasing.
Oh, I know, you're right. Do you know the funny thing about that? Actually, Michael Healy-Ray and Danny Healy-Ray were at the meeting last night, which I was thrilled because... Do you know the funny thing is, you have a lot of stuff in politics like that where people, you know, shouting across the chamber. Truth is, I was shared an office with, or Danny rather, was across the corridor from me when I was in opposition for the last 5 years. We actually got on very well. And my sense of that, we won't make this leap. If we do this as a you versus us, urban versus rural, left versus right, whatever, that's sort of divisive politics, we won't make the scale of change we need to make in the timeline we need to make it. And we do have to make it. And my experience, and in Kerry today, I'm going to the council now just after this and meeting the executive, but also meeting the councillors, listening and going on various farm visits after that. My sense around the country is vast majority of Irish people know we do need to make this change because for their children's future, all our children's future, there isn't a future if we just keep burning everything.
Yeah.
And I actually think they do want to be part of the transition. And yes, you'll have disputes and disagreements on the technical measures.
And protesting turf cutters and other issues.
But even
like
that. As you say, we discussed it last night. There's a lot of scare stuff out there. You know, a lot of people come up to me afterwards and they're very genuine. Listen, I'm very worried. You know, what can I do next winter? If I can reassure people on that one. We will be introducing regulations about solid fuels, and for purely straight up health reasons, there's significant health effects by burning smoky coal, by burning wet wood, by burning turf. We're not going to regulate the use of it in the home. And there's no new regulations coming in terms of what happens on the bog. You know, if someone's cutting their own foot in their own turf, that's not going to change next winter. But we will change and regulate how it's sold. And I think that's an appropriate health measure. And in time, what we really need to do then is focus on making sure we have the money to improve the homes so that they're really healthy and energy efficient. And not demonising, or not scaring the living daylights out of, or not putting any kind of prosecution on anyone in what's happening in their home, but just help to switch to a better home. This transition will only work, as I said, if it's towards a better system. And the truth is, when you have a really well insulated home, particularly when you're moving now, the new heating systems we'll switch to are heat pumps. They're really efficient. They're very clean. They don't break down. They're using our own power, and that we have in abundance. And that switch, once people start to do it, let's see, this isn't a frightening thing. This is actually a better, a clever thing to do.
Speaking of that, finally, it's a major challenge for you. Interesting figures out in the census yesterday about the number of vacant, rentable homes, even in Dublin. There are a number of challenges. It's one of the big things this government, if you don't get it right, that you will probably pay for in the ballot box. Absolutely. Are you going to get housing sorted?
Yeah, we have to. There's no choice. It's the vacancy problem. It was interesting, the figures. It wasn't as high as some people expected. It was higher in Kerry, Mayo, Donegal. A lot of holiday homes as kind of part of that.
A lot of those being rented out short-term Airbnb. This regulation's coming in next.
Just one thing, Gerard, I think is a possibility this time, because everything is changing. I'm Minister of Transport, so I can keep a close eye on what's happening on the transport side. There is a shift happening. With remote working, we're starting to see, I think, the potential, particularly towns around the country, start to develop where people don't all have to commute to the bigger town or the bigger city. And I think that's the real opportunity. Yes, we need to deliver the housing, but we also need to deliver where is the housing. I think a lot of this town centre's first strategy, if you look at what housing we have an incredible collection of stunning 19th century market towns, a lot of which people have moved out of in the last 30, 40 years. If we can move back in terms of improving, retrofitting and delivering new houses mixed into town centres, the advantage of that is the resources we have, the schools, the pubs, the churches, everything within walking distance.
And what do you say finally, because we're sure, to the argument that comes that planning changes and planning restrictions are keeping people from living in the countryside, that you want to herd everyone into the towns against their will?
What I don't want is our towns to go into dereliction. And I think we don't want to, we want to see that those sort of towns thrive. And the towns where it's happening, that's what people do want. Like, people want to live, and there's a real strength in our towns and villages. And it's not anti-rural Ireland. It's not kind of saying you can't move there, you can't move here. But what we don't want to do is to see that resource we have in our existing towns not being fully utilised. We want to see people, as I said, having easy access to the local school, the local church, the local pub, the local shop, the local business. And I think so. A lot of what we do in terms of developing housing, and also develop sort of hubs where people can work remotely. Yeah. You have still a social component to it. I look at towns where it's happening. You know, I mean, through personal connections, you look at Clorglan as a town booming because of enterprise and innovation and kind of clusters of people who kind of working together in innovative type towns. We should have Clorglans everywhere where we're kind of developing that local economy with strong local towns. I think that's the way forward.
Minister Eamon Ryan speaking to me shortly before coming on air this morning. If you have a view on what he had to say in that wide-ranging interview on a number of different subjects, get in touch with us on the show.